Last week for our gospel lesson, we heard Jesus tell the parable of the rich landowner and the dishonest manager. And he ended that parable by saying, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve God and wealth. And today's gospel picks up at that same place, and Jesus tells another parable, the parable of Lazarus and the rich man. Jesus says that there was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen, and who feasted sumptuously every day. And outside the gates of his house, there was a poor man named Lazarus, who was starving and would gladly take the scraps from the table of the rich man, who was clothed in rags and covered with sores, and the dogs would come and lick the sores of the poor man. So what Jesus is doing immediately in this parable is creating a contrast between a very rich person and a very poor person. The contrast is unavoidable. The rich man was clothed in purple and fine linen, he says. Now, purple was a very expensive dye to have, and so no one wore purple unless they had a lot of money. Same thing with linen. It was a fine cloth that had to be woven specially, so only those who were wealthy could afford to have linen. Most people in that time wore drab, gray, homespun clothing. They couldn't afford money to have it with fancy colors or fancy weaves. And Lazarus, of course, was so poor that all he had was rags to be dressed in. The rich man feasted sumptuously every day. Didn't matter what day of the week it was, he could have a fine meal with vegetables, a main dish, bread, meat every day, and some fine wine to go with it. Most people had two meals a day, which consisted of bread made of local grain mixed with olive oil and baked, and if they're lucky, some homemade wine that they were able to make. And Lazarus himself had not even that much. He was longing for the scraps that fell from the rich man's table. So the contrast between the rich man and Lazarus couldn't be greater. Jesus is emphasizing the contrast. Well, in the parable, Lazarus died, and the angels came and took him up to be with Abraham. The rich man also died, and he was buried, and he found himself in Hades in torment. And he looked up to Father Abraham, and he said, send Lazarus to give me a drop of water for my tongue, because I'm in agony in these flames. And Abraham said to him, he said, remember, in your lifetime, you had received good things, and Lazarus also received evil things. But now you are in torment in flames, and Lazarus is here by my side. And besides that, a great chasm is fixed between you and us, and no one can travel between the two. So the rich man says, well, then at least send Lazarus to warn my brothers so they won't end up here. And Abraham says, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them. He says, no, Father Abraham, but if someone from the dead comes to tell my brothers, they'll believe him. Abraham says, if they don't listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they listen to someone risen from the dead. Well, the point of the parable, I think, is what Jesus often said, the first will be last, and the last will be first. In his lifetime, it seemed like the rich man was the one who was blessed, and Lazarus was cursed. But in God's reality, the roles were reversed. Well, how rich is rich? The rich man had fine robes and good food, but how rich is rich today? Survey was done of Americans who asked how much money it would take them to feel rich. And it averaged out, people said, about $2.3 million. How rich is rich? I think everybody has a different answer to that question. Once a wealthy man was asked, how much money is enough? And he answered, just a little bit more than I have right now. I think we probably all feel that way. How rich is rich? Studies have been done that show that as people gain income, they become happier and happier up to about $75,000 worth of income. And no matter how much money they get after that, their happiness doesn't increase. Today, 1% of the people control 40% of the wealth. Now that just doesn't seem right to me. Jeff Bezos' worth, according to the internet today, was $1.08 billion. Now what do you do with $1.08 billion? Should anyone have that much money? Any one person? That seems immoral to me. They're homeless out in the streets, and here's a person with $1.08 billion. There's something wrong with that. It's just like in the parable. The wealth gap and the inequality is as great today as it was in Jesus' parable. I know that we want to believe that the rich earned their wealth, that through their hard work and through their entrepreneurship, they created the wealth that they have. I believe in capitalism and I believe in entrepreneurship, but there's got to be some limits. Some billionaires like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have signed the Giving Pledge. They have agreed to donate 50% of their wealth to philanthropy in their lifetime. It's a good start. Inequality, gross inequality, is not good for a country. The richer people are, the more reluctant they are to spend on the common good, on things like roads and libraries and healthcare and parks, those sorts of things. They don't need them. And gross inequality distorts our values. If getting rich is the only thing that's important, then we lose the values of the arts and humanities and the love of nature and the sense of community and being together as a country. And vast inequality eats away at our sense of fairness. We lose our belief in equal opportunity, that anyone who works hard and sacrifices can get ahead. That's the bedrock of our country. You know, the rich man in the parable didn't see Lazarus at his gates. He walked out the gates every day and Lazarus was right there, but he just didn't even see him. He just walked right past him. Even in Hades, he only saw him as a means to get something for himself or for his family. He never saw him as a person. Wealth is corrosive, and great wealth is even more corrosive. You know, it's no wonder that Paul in the epistles writes, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Now, to be sure, this parable applies to all of us, not just the ultra-rich. All of us in this parable are warned about our love of money, that it doesn't get out of hand. You know, if we love money more than people, that's not right. Lynn Twist is the author of the book, The Soul of Money. And she writes about her and her husband and the journey they had to deal with their wealth. Her husband graduated with an MBA in the 70s, and he got hired by a company that was on the ground floor of selling computers. And the company just expanded and expanded, and as it did, he rose up in the ranks, and the money started pouring in. And they were young, and they wanted to keep up with their friends, and so when the friends started talking about wine, they learned about wine, and then of course they had to have a wine cellar, and their friends had fancy cars, so they got a fancy car, and then they had to have a station wagon to pack the kids around. They used to be satisfied with camping in the car and a drive to Yosemite, but then it became skiing in Sun Valley and sailing in Hawaii. They said that the most important things in their lives were their marriage and their family. But she said, if you had taken a video of their life and then looked at it objectively, you would see that they didn't really care that much for their kids. They were always with the nanny or with babysitters while they were off doing something special. It took the launch of the Hunger Project to change them. The Hunger Project was a nonprofit whose goal was to eliminate childhood hunger everywhere in the world. And they bought into this project, and it really resonated with them. And as they began to try to work with this nonprofit, they realized how foolish their own values were and how important it was to contribute something to the betterment of the world and to other people. And so they began to reevaluate everything in their lives. They had to address their excessive lifestyle. And they began to seek out more diverse friends from a variety of backgrounds and look for a diversity of experiences, not just rich vacations. And as they did, they found more meaning in their lives and in their giving, and they began to reallocate their resources. Well, the rich man in the parable feasted sumptuously every day while Lazarus, or outside his gate, was starving. I wonder what the rich man could have learned and how he could have grown if he would have looked down and seen Lazarus as a person. I'll end with the advice that Paul gives to Timothy, the young pastor who's Paul is trying to encourage. Paul writes this: as for those in the present age who are rich, command them not to be haughty or to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but rather on God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share, thus storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of the life that really is life. Amen.